Purim, which are dedicated to this theme of focusing on topics from the Parsha and analyzing them halachically. You can imagine that there are certain Parshios, you just have to think of the Sefer HaChinuch, it was his idea first. There are certain Parshios where the Chinuch has many mitzvos, or a few, and there are other Parshios where the Chinuch has no mitzvos, which are more narrative in the Parsha. But even those, there's a long history of people figuring out ways to find mitzvah and halakhic connections to the Parsha. And we hope to do that. And there are many such svarim. I'll be quoting some today. And over the rest of the series, I hope to be quoting more of those. But these are the types of svarim. I don't know if he still does it, but way back when Rabbi Fran started, and I used to hear the tapes, so the halakhic topics that he chose were also connected to the Parsha. And I guess it's a little bit of a theme for the year because Rabbi Reisman's the Motzei Shabbos year, of course, is called the Navi year, but we all know that it's nothing but. It's a halachic year, which he finds after he reads a few psukim in Navi. So that's that was his chiddush to apply this to Tanakh. But Torah is a pretty popular idea, and that's the idea of the year. For our first topic, I chose an issue which, at first glance, perhaps does not have any connection to the Parsha, but in fact, we'll see momentarily that it really does. And that is, we know the end of the Parsha is the story of the Dor HaFlaga. And the opening pasuk of Parak Yiral tells us, he called art Safa Achas, Echos, I should say, that the whole world used to speak one language. What was the language? So Rashi tells us that language was none other than Lashon HaKodesh. The source sheets, by the way, is final word of introduction. The style of source sheets that I hope to use for this year are as you have in front of you, which is primarily giving you what we would call in college an annotated bibliography, so to speak, or a list of the sources, the bibliography, divided up into sections, which hopefully will not only make the sheet easier to follow, but for those who want to bring the sheet home and keep it for further research or further reference, that you have the sources. And also, I chose, at least this evening, to include three of the more interesting sources on the back. But we won't be focused primarily reading inside because I don't want the sheet to go too long. And I'd like to at least make reference to all the sources on the front part of the sheet and at least stimulate thoughts and further research on your own. So Chumash tells us in beginning of Parakeet Aleph that the whole world used to speak one language. And Rashi tells us on that pasuk that language was Lashon HaKodesh. The significance of Lashon HaKodesh is further highlighted by the Yerushalmi in Maseches Megillah, which also quotes the same Chazal, that the world spoke Lashon HaKodesh before the Dor HaFlaga. And then adds, and what was so significant, after all, where did the people get Lashon HaKodesh from? The Yerushalmi there adds that this is the language, Kaviyachol, that is spoken by God. When God speaks, He speaks in Lashon HaKodesh. So what does that mean? So it's interesting, just Agav, two of the classical Mefarshim on the Yerushalmi discuss this. And the Pnei Moshe says this is a reference to the fact that Hashem created the world. The Mishnah Avos says, Basara Ma'amaros, God created the world with 10 utterances. So again, we don't really understand what that means. But when God spoke, this is the Mishnah Avos. Most of the other Mishnahs and Avos are a little bit more accessible. But whatever this means, what utterances did he say? He said he spoke in Lashon HaKodesh, the Pnei Moshe says. The Carbonada actually says something interesting, which is, again, I never thought of it, even though once you think of it, I guess it's presumably true, that what language was God speaking when He gave us the Torah? When He gave the, wasn't the art school, He spoke in the real thing. So those are the two references that the Mefarshim suggest for the significance of God Himself speaking Hebrew. Either way, the Yerushalmi connects that to our Pasuk, the idea that the world spoke Lashon HaKodesh at that point in history. The Gemara Chagiga Daf Chaf Aleph adds, not surprisingly, that if the Ribono Shel Olam is up in heaven and he's speaking Lashon HaKodesh, so none other than the angels also, to the extent the angels speak to God, to themselves, so they're also speaking Lashon HaKodesh. And for those who really are further interested, the Sefer HaKuzari, which is a famous work of Jewish philosophy by none other than Rav Yehuda HaLevi, so Imam Arbeis, so he also there discusses, he's asked by the Melech, the nature of that book is that there's this perhaps historical fiction. There is historical evidence of something similar actually occurring, but he uses the theme or the rhetorical device of a king asking him questions who eventually himself converts his whole people, the Melech HaKuzarim, and the Melech asks the Chacham, as he's known, what is the significance of Lashon HaKodesh, and there the Kuzari has a very nice idea about the inherent superiority of Lashon HaKodesh over any other language. And I think the issue which I really would like to address this evening is to what extent this idea is merely mystical or somewhat spectacular of God speaking Hebrew, and the whole world used to speak Hebrew. Some of us even still speak a little Hebrew. To what extent is that a nice thing? But perhaps is it more than that? And perhaps is there a mitzvah to learn and or speak Hebrew? And perhaps, if we don't want to go as far as that, but perhaps one would suggest that there's what we would call a hefsher mitzvah. Namely, that knowing Hebrew and being conversant in its rules, especially in its grammar, might help us for some greater good. What's the greater good? Talmud Torah. Right? Is it a hefsher mitzvah for Talmud Torah? And that's what I really want to discuss in terms of a real analysis. So the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Dav Gimel, and Rashi there also point out the significant necessity of knowing Hebrew grammar in order to understand Chumash and reach correct halakhic conclusions. This was further addressed as a whole tshuva by the Chavos Yair. Chavos Yair is Rav Yair Bachrach, who lived about 400 years ago. He mentions in the Hakdama the reason that he calls the Sefer Chavos Yair, aside from the fact that there's a pasuk, but also because I think it was his mother. It's either his mother or his grandmother, but I think it was his mother, who was a tremendous Isha Chachama, Melumeda. She was very learned in Torah, and one of his primary rebbeim. So in her honor, he called it Chavos Yair. So he, there also has a tshuva where he discusses, he stresses strongly the need and the importance of knowing Hebrew grammar. And in the Hagdama that the children of the Gra wrote to the Bir Hagra, which is of course a commentary of the Vilna Gaon on Shulchan Aruch, we know the Gra was very into this, very into the idea of grammar. Again, frankly, it's why often learning the Bir Hagra is less than thrilling. We're looking for a fancy Hakira or something, and the Gra is hanging on these, what we call, Pshatovnik ideas. But that was who the Gra was, to a large extent. And the Bnei Hagra and the Hakdama of Shulchan Aruch, elaborate on this idea of how significant the Gra felt that knowing Hebrew grammar was. But again, you could, stopping there, we still don't have it as extreme as one perhaps could. It doesn't necessarily make it a mitzvah. It might mean that, make sure you know or know of somebody who knows Hebrew grammar to help you, perhaps. Rav Moshe Feinstein, and this, for those who want to look, this is the first source on the back of your sheet. Rav Moshe is asked, interestingly, of all places, in Chelek Eben Ezer, because it related to Gittin. And some Rav asked him about Gittin and all the people who have secular non-Jewish names. So what do you do for that in the get? How significant is a non-Jewish name? Usually, no matter what your non-Jewish name is, but if you have, your name is Yankel and Reuben and Esther, so that's what goes into the get, just like it would in any other area. Formerly we're known by our Hebrew names, even if we otherwise go by a secular name. So the question was, again, that's how he gets into the topic of how significant are secular names, and of course he mentions, and this would have been the other place I would have chosen to discuss this topic, Parshas Shemot, because of the famous Medrash about how Lo Shina Shemam V'Lashonam, and the fact that one of the things that the Jewish people are told have kept in Egypt, even though they assimilated, was that they kept their Hebrew names, and they spoke Jewishly, whatever that means, and they were modest, even though obviously they had sunk in very low at any other level. And Rav Moshe Feinstein elaborates again, he uses that context, and he has a line which he doesn't back up, there's no proofs, there's no sources, and frankly, it's very extreme. But he says it, and that's why, as I say, it's a significant source which is on the sheet. I have it as the underlying part. He quotes this Medrash, and he says, Shechazinan, we see, we're going to get back to the Chazal, but he already talks about that famous Medrash, She'afshu mitzvah ledaber v'loshan ha-kodesh, even though there is a mitzvah to speak Hebrew, and he quotes some midrashim, which we're going to get back to in a few moments. He says, and again, there's no proof, he just says it straight out, that there is a mitzvah to speak Hebrew. And obviously to speak Hebrew means you have to know it. There's a mitzvah, the Rav Moshe Feinstein says, to speak Hebrew. But he says, we have two types of mitzvahs. So it's called a chiyuvus and a kiyumus. It's interesting that Rav Moshe also famously held that living in Eretz Yisrael was only bizmanenu, a kiyumus. So he holds that speaking Hebrew, similar to living in Israel, is a mitzvah if you do it. You're not obligated to do it, and therefore if you don't do it, you're not sinning. Right? The parallel is, of course, let's say the rest of the chag, sitting in the sukkah. You don't have to sit in the sukkah because you can eat other foods. But if you sit in the sukkah, you fulfill a mitzvah. That should obviously be contrasted with something like tefillin, which you have to do every day. And if you don't do, then you did an aveira, you committed a sin. So Moshe Feinstein says that speaking Hebrew is a mitzvah, which is an unbelievable statement, especially since he doesn't really support it. But he points out, he pulls back one little bit, It's only a mitzvah kiyumis. You don't do an aveira, after all. You know, people speak Yiddish. And Yiddish, I'm sorry to say, is not Lashon HaKodesh. Could be. Okay. It might be Jewish, but it's not Lashon HaKodesh. Okay. At least we have one quotable thing from this year. Furthermore, the Pardes Yosef. The Pardes Yosef is one of the other very interesting Sfarim. I believe he was a Sfardi. It's very likely, it's recently been reproduced in some very nice volumes, which means that it's easier to read, but a lot more expensive to buy. The Pardes Yosef, I don't know how long ago he lived, and I think he was a Sfardi. He collects, it's an amalgam of halachic sources and midrashic or agadic sources, but elaborate far-off-the-topic discussions on the Parshios. And the Pardes Yosef in Shmos has a very intriguing idea. He also holds that speaking Hebrew is a mitzvah, knowing Hebrew, I should say, is knowing Hebrew is a mitzvah, and he at least has a source. It's a little bit of a far-fetched one, so to speak, or it's not far-fetched, but indirect, but at least, unlike Rav Moshe, he has a source. And that is that we know that every 7 years on Sukkot, there was a mitzvah called Hakel. All the Jewish people came together, they were in Yerushalayim anyway, and the king had to read from certain parts, of the Torah and extol the people and inspire them. In the recent return to Israel, there was a controversy. Obviously, the mitzvah doesn't apply for a lot of technical reasons, but there were certain rabbanim, I think this probably goes back, I'm guessing, to the beginning of the founding of the state. I don't know the history exactly, but certain rabbanim who felt that we should commemorate it and have a nostalgic hakel. There were other rabbanim who thought this was terrible, unsurprisingly. This was a machlokes in contemporary Israel who couldn't imagine such a thing. But it happens to be that one of the years that I was in Israel for Sukkot, there was a hakel to have it at the Kotel. It's a very inspiring thing to be at. Whether there's any significance or not to it, I don't know. But Rav Rashi is there, and other great rabbanim, and I think the Prime Minister even came. And I mean, you can imagine the Kotel filled. You can't see it. You can't see the floor anywhere on the Kotel Plaza. There's thousands and thousands of people. So there's mitzvah of a hakel, and the halacha is that A, everyone has to understand what the hakel is. Or else there's no point. And it's an explicit halacha. The Rambam quotes it. Hakel has to be done in Lashon HaKodesh. The Pardes Yosef says, if there's one of the 613 mitzvahs is hakel, and it has to be done in Hebrew. And part of the mitzvah is that I have to understand what's being read by the king. If that's the case, I have to know Hebrew at least, because once every 7 years I'm going to have to understand hakel. So that's what he suggests. And again, I think, I don't know if it's the strongest proof, but he and Moshe both seem to suggest that there's a real mitzvah of at least speaking, if not knowing, or knowing, if not speaking, Hebrew. The real place where this topic really finds its traction, really gets developed, and where we'll spend really the significant part now this year, comes really in this next section of sources, what I have labeled here as Os Dalid. And it comes from really a Sifrei, which is the Halachic Medrash, the Sifrei, which is quoted already in Rashi and Parshas Ekev, in the Parsha of Shema, where, and there, Rashi, quoting really the Sifrei, tells us a very interesting source. You have the Sifrei? Nikan Omer, this is a fascinating medrash. Shetinok Masil Ledaber, when a child begins to know how to speak. Ovav medaber imo lashon hakodesh. You should speak with your child in lashon hakodesh, in Hebrew. Umilamdo Torah, and teach him Torah. V'imein medaber imo lashon hakodesh. If you don't speak lashon hakodesh to your child, v'ein umilamdo Torah, ro'ilo ki'ilu kovro. There's different versions of the medrash, but either way, better he shouldn't have been born, or better the child should be buried. Very harsh words. But again, this is not for now, but certainly, rhetorically, the Medrash is very sensationally describing how important it is to do these two things to the child, and at the very basic, you know, fundamental time of the child's development, physical and mental development. Now, the child is going to talk. You got to talk to them in Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, and teach them Torah. So, that Medrash is found in a number of places, but there is a significant parallel with a slight, teeny variation. I thought I had this source here, but I thought I had brought it with me, but I must have left it at home. A copy of the Tosefta. So I'm going to have to paraphrase for you. I apologize. But this is the Tosefta in Chagiga in Perek Aleph, Halacha Beis. The Tosefta there, if you read it quickly, you'll think it's just redundant. It's a parallel to this Sifrei. But in one crucial area, what did the Medrash tell us to separate. Talk to your child in Hebrew and teach them Torah. If you look in the Tosefta, it really would have been better if I had the lashon for you, the language, the quote. The Tosefta says, one little variation, teach your child lashon HaKodesh and Torah. The Medrash says speak, but not necessarily teach. Speak in Hebrew and teach Torah. Again, if you first read the Sefer, I don't know how many people got that as I read it the first time. Perhaps, again, some of you probably did get it, but it's easy to miss the first time that distinction. But it's highlighted that distinction significantly when you compare it to the Tosefta, where, again, that one little word change really highlights the difference. The Tosefta says you have a mitzvah, really an obligation, and that's an understatement considering the way the Medrash ended about what the child's future is if you don't do it. Teach your child Lashon HaKodesh and Torah. That's an unbelievable, unbelievable thing. The question is what to make of it. So there's another parallel text as well, which is the Yerushalmi, but we're going to get to the Yerushalmi in a little bit. Now where this really comes to the fold is the second source on the back of your sheet, the Rambam in Parash HaMishnayot. It's interesting that Rav Moshe didn't quote this, because of all of the Rishonim, the most significant and direct source that indicates a mitzvah to learn or to know Hebrew and Lashon HaKodesh is none other than the Rambam. Perek Bey's Mishnah Aleph in Perkei Avos, a very famous Mishnah. One of the things that Mishnah tells us is Havi Zayar, Mitzvah Chamura, Kakala, Kakala Chamura, Kachamura. You have to be careful, the Mishnah tells us, don't start thinking and prioritizing in your life. I'm going to worry about that mitzvah, that's an important one. This one is not as important, I won't worry about it. So the Mishnah tells us, no, you have to take all of them seriously, because who knows what you think is important and not important, who knows how God really values these mitzvahs. Take everything seriously. So the Rambam, in his commentary to the Mishnah, the Parash HaMishnayos, elaborates at some length on this Mishnah, and right at the beginning of his comments, and again, in any other context, if your antenna isn't tuned to this topic, you could easily miss the significance of this Rambam, at least in the beginning of the Rambam, which is really just giving you examples. Very often, when anyone, whether it's me or any teacher, you make a point, and then, you know, pedagogically, you want to give illustrations and examples. But as a listener, it's natural that you might tune out for the examples if you feel like you understood the point to begin with. So you read the Mishnah Novos, it makes us, you know, it's harder to implement than it is to read, frankly, but all right, that's for a Musar Shmuz, that's not for now. But it seems very straightforward. I wouldn't have read the Rambam so carefully, the medayik and the nuances of his examples, per se. But that would be a mistake. Because if you look at the Rambam gives a list of a mitzvah kala. Again, a mitzvah kala is mitzvahs which we often think of as being light, as unimportant. And again, the Mishnah's coming to teach us, no, they're really important, maybe they're even more important. So what are the examples of the mitzvahs kala, the light, easy mitzvahs that the Rambam gives? Am I in the right place? Where did I go? Exactly right. Second, third line. Akakach Amr Shitzrach Lizar Bar Mitzvah Shechashiv Ba Shehi Kala. You should be careful in mitzvahs which you think are light and easy. Kisim Kasa Regia, like being happy on a holiday. Vulmeidas Lashon HaKodesh. Kimitzvah Shez Bar Lecha Chamasa Shigdola Kamila Vetzitzah Sushkitas Pesach. So Rambam gives us examples on both sides. What's a serious mitzvah? So you can imagine, I mean, these are easy grand slam examples. Karban Pesach, circumcision, bris milah, those are heavy hitters. Those are, we all know, we take them seriously. That's a chamura. What's an example of a light, easy mitzvah which we might not otherwise take seriously? Rambam gives two examples. Simchas Yom Tov, rejoicing on the holiday, and learning Lashon HaKodesh. Now think about that for a moment. Simchas HaRegel, having Simcha on the Regel, is a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's a mitzvah chiyuvis. We all have to do it. There's a very famous discussion between the Rambam and Tosfos, whether that applies even without a Beis HaMikdash, and a famous Shagisari, the whole discussion. And it may even be d'oraisa nowadays, but certainly, theoretically, in its most pristine form, Meheri Yavana, the third Beis HaMikdash, there's a mitzvah on every yontif, at least, if not even to this very day, from the Torah obligation, rejoice on the holiday. And we can, you know, easily make light of it. You think of sukkahs, right? What do you think of so seriously? The lulav and the sukkah. Those are the chamuros. And you could easily have forgotten that there's also an equally grave obligation to rejoice on the holiday. You could seriously, you can imagine forgetting that. Pesach, right? So many other things to worry about. How many, did I eat enough kibbutz of matzah and the maror and everything? Chametz, you could forget. You might not take it as seriously. comes up with the Rambam and says, no, that's what the Mishnah is telling us, Mitzvah Kala, take it seriously. But then it's an unbelievably, it's astonishing. Equivalent, on the same sentence, the next words, what does the Rambam tell you? What's another example of Mitzvah Kala? Learning Hebrew. Could you imagine such a thing? I think if all schools were guided by this, they would probably have higher standards with the higher degree teachers. An unbelievable thing. Again, when I was a kid, the only qualification you had to be in as a degree teacher is that you were Israeli. In Israel, you could never have gotten a job because what qualifications do you have as a teacher? When you're American, you're Israeli, so that qualifies you to teach Hebrew. The Rambam says it's a mitzvah, apparently. And I found, I mean, many people quote this Rambam. This is a very famous Rambam. But I saw that one of the famous classical commentaries on the Tosefta is the Chasdei David. If you look in the standard editions in the back of the Gemara of the Tosefta, you'll see a little print on the bottom, the Tosefta, of the Chasdei David. The Chasdei David, if I'm not mistaken, connects this Tosefta and this Rambam. He says, what's the source for the Rambam? How did Rambam know that it's a mitzvah? Then it's the Tosefta, because as we said a few moments ago, the Tosefta says, when your child learns how to talk, there's a obligation to teach them Torah and Hebrew, as opposed to the Medrash, which Rashi quotes on Chumash, which is just talk to them in Hebrew and teach them Torah. The Tosefta said, teach them Lashon HaKodesh. And the Chasdei David suggests that that is the Rambam's marker. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It doesn't really matter. The Rambam stands on his own and is a very significant source, and it's really shocking and needs explanation. Perhaps the reason why it most obviously would need elaboration or explanation is not just because of perhaps the shock of it, again, certainly depending on your perspective. Those of us who were trained in classical yeshivas, this is unbelievably shocking. But I have one story to tell you, but I'll hold that off for another few moments. But, okay, it is what it is. The stronger question, and we know this whether it would be in learning or lahavdil in a debate, the strongest questions you can ask are always the internal ones. And here, a question is raised by none other than the Torah Temima. Baruch HaLevi Epstein, who wrote a very well-known recent modern commentary on the Chumash, the Torah Temima did two things. The one is more well-known than the other. The more well-known thing is that on each pasuk of the Chumash, he gives you a list of the Gemaras which are discussing in whatever context that particular pasuk. So if you remember, there's a Gemara that talks about this pasuk, but I don't know all of Gemara. How do I know where it is? If you find a pasuk, I tell this just recently. I think it was over Sukkah, someone was trying to find a Gemara. I didn't know where it was either. But I know what pasuk it quoted. I said, find the Torah Temima, open it up, and he'll tell you where the Gemara is that quotes that pasuk. But that's the main value of the Torah Temima. On the bottom of the page of the Torah Temima, he also suggests his own explanations. And this seems like any other classical or modern Masari Shon Chumash. Yes, happens to be, as a Rav, I only started recently appreciating the bottom half, because now that I have to give drushas, he says some of the most wild, crazy things. And those are great for drushes. So very, very interesting things that occur to Mima. So on this pasuk that we went back to with the Sifrei, the Dibar Tabam, the pasuk in Parshas Eka from Shema, the Torah to Mima has a discussion about this issue. And in fact, if you look at the bottom source now, the third source I have on the back page, he quotes this whole idea. And just to show you how significant the Torah to Mima himself thought the topic was, Torah to Mima, for those who know, is a banker. Torah to Mima was a banker. Anyway. He writes, if you look at the beginning of the second paragraph on the right-hand side, he writes that he wrote, no pun intended, a whole chibur, a whole essay, a pamphlet, a monograph on this very topic of the significance of Lashon HaKodesh, which he calls Safa L'Ne'emanim, right, the faithful tongue. He even tells you, again, where and when was it published? Was it Warsaw? Yeah, Warsaw, Operation Nun Gimel. Right, that's less than 100 years ago. I'm sorry, 110 years ago, I'm sorry, a little more than 100 years ago. So I don't know if it's extant or not. I didn't have a chance to call the YU library to see if they have it, but they probably, if anybody has it, they have it. So I don't know, and I'm not that interested in really reading it per se, because he tells you what he more or less the highlights are here. But fascinating, he wrote a whole essay, a whole pamphlet, he says, on this topic. What was the big issue that bothers him so? So if you look, going back to the beginning of the paragraph, he writes, from the Tosefta, you see three lines in, he has the Tosefta, you see from this that it's a mitzvah. However, what's he bothered by? Where are we? Let's see. Somewhere in that paragraph. Five lines down, six lines down in the second paragraph. With Amheni Biyoser, I'm very, very concerned. I don't understand. Actually, even before that, he points out He says, in that essay I pointed out, this unbelievable, amazing thing, this plea, ala poskim, she hishmitu ha, the sifrei b'tosefta, b'chiyav limud lashon ha-kodesh. No one, Tur, the Rambam, others, they don't, Shacharach, don't quote this idea, the sosefta, that when your child knows how to speak, teach them Hebrew, it's not quoted in the halachic, the legal code. It's not quoted as a halacha. But how could it be? A medrash is an authoritative source. A tosefta, for sure, is an authoritative source. No one argues. He doesn't understand it. And he says, the tamini biyoser, and my biggest problem is on none other than the Rambam. Because you could say that the others hold, that it's what's called, what we call an asmachta. Didn't really, really mean it as a, you know, it was the rabbi darshaning in shul. You know, he was, so Chazal did that sometimes. They had a nice idea. They think it's important, there's no question. But it's not an absolute obligation. They said it comes from a pasuk. They didn't really mean it's a source. Okay. But you can't say that, says the Torah Tamima, for the Rambam. Because the Rambam in the Parashat Mishnayos, which we just read together, says that one of the mitzvahs talos, but a mitzvah on par with rejoicing on Yotif, is Lashon HaKodesh. So how come the Rambam, of all people, never quotes this obligation?
Well, see, David says he does. And he says they teach your children a few psukim.
Oh, so we're going to get to that Rambam, but the Rambam never says
You
have to learn Lashon HaKodesh. That is, to me, a very, very difficult question. The Torah Tamima suggests, very interestingly, for those who want to read it inside, very interestingly, a socio-historical answer. He says, well, perhaps that's because this mitzvah does not always apply. Because it's only realistic, he says, to expect people to know Hebrew if they live in Israel.
The Rambam says mitzvahs that are not. Karbonis. I mean, the Rambam talks about mitzvahs that are not naked money.
In Mishnah Torah. Right. Famously against the other...
Right. I'm saying it's going back to the same problem.
Right. So he ends up rejecting it. I don't remember if that's why, but he does reject it. He has another answer in the last paragraph, Ulai. But the first answer he suggests is perhaps it's not realistic. He says for a lot of reasons, which I won't go into. Right, we live in America. We can all, you know, it's not so easy. If you grow up in America, it'll become fluent in Hebrew. So maybe that's what he says. But again, that's, as you say, Sam, a very weak answer. And he's really left with a much better question than any suggestions that he can come up with. Why, of all people, does the Rambam not quote that there's a mitzvah to know and to learn Lashon HaKodesh? No, but more than that. If that was all it was, it'd be okay, because we have that often with the Rambam. And then we do a little mental gymnastics, and we give an explanation why, even though he holds it's a mitzvah, but he has his own rules, which he himself lays out very lengthily, I might add, in the Sharashim, of how he decides to pick what goes into the 613 independently and what doesn't. And many things are mitzvahs, which are not in the 613, right? We all know, there's a lot more than 613 mitzvahs. So that wouldn't bother me per se, but it's in the Mishnah Torah, where he is exhaustive, he doesn't acknowledge it as well. They're all Daraitas, everything. Why he says Lashon Kodesh? Why did he say that?
Because Elam gave this, range of what to do.
Why are you assuming that there's a range, though? He gives two examples. Okay, you could say that. I'm not convinced. You could say that. That would be very extreme. The way that usually the more methodologically, the much more obvious and strong diuk is to say, as we said before, that if he includes it alongside rejoicing on Yontif, that means that he is putting them together. But the possibility, listen, and you have a difficult question, sometimes you have people difficult answers, but I don't think so.
Because all the mitzvahs come through, except the Rambam,
also everything's all right. Right. The point is, though, for each one for their own reason, we all associate, and maybe even to a certain extent correctly, but we all associate Karban Pesach, Bris Milah, those are chamuros.
Yeah, what's tzitzis going in there?
This is not the topic for today.
Okay.
We'll get to tzitzis. Mirza Shem, that'll be a topic. It also comes up with Chumash, right?
Because the other two have
Chorus. Okay. Good. So obviously it means more than that. That you could have given a whole drasha. But I'm broadening the scope. Yeah. Don't just think that it has to have a death penalty attached to it to be a Chumash. Tzitzis is also important. We all know tzitzis is important. Right? Okay. Yeah, not for now. Why? What's the question? Why it's not even a Mishnah Torah? We just had this conversation. Right. Okay. Well, we're going to get to that as an answer perhaps anyway. But then the Kanami, if it was just not in Sefer Mitzvos, we would be okay with it. Okay. So I want to now mention, if you look quickly, for those who have the source sheet on the front page, on the bottom line, I have two sources. Those are what we call secondary literature, essays that I read that were really very significant in helping me find all the other sources earlier on the site, on the page. I quoted two of them. The second one is called Gevurah Shitzchak. We'll get to that in a little bit. By Yitzchak Sarutskin, who I think he's been back and forth. I think he's now back in Cleveland. Does anybody know? He was in Lakewood, now he's in Cleveland, Cleveland back in Lakewood. He's from the famous Sarutskin family, one of the premier families of the last generation or so, with one of the Rosh Yeshivas and Tells in Cleveland. And he's a prolific writer. He's written close to 20 Svarim. And he has Svarim, this is one of the examples of Svarim written, the Gevurah Shitzchak, that's the Rina Shitzchak, which he also wrote. Gevurah Shitzchak has two volumes on Chumash, Halachic Essays. The earlier source, which I want to get to now, is from a book called Cold So Fire. Is a collection of essays, most of which, if not all of which, were already published in independent journals, but put together by Rav Yehuda Gershuni Zatzal. Rav Gershuni, anyone familiar with the name? Massive Talmid Chacham, was the son-in-law of Rav Lazer Silver. Rav Lazer Silver, those who were in shul on Yom Kippur, the story with the monastery, that was the same Rav Lazer Silver, who was a super genius in his own right. He was so genius that no one understood him. But he was a super genius, and his son-in-law, Rav Gershuni, was also a major Talmid Chacham. I don't know if he was Israeli, American, or European, but he did most of his significant contributions in life, I think, as they're living in Eretz Yisrael. And he put out this particular essay that I'm referring to now was actually originally published in Or HaMizrach, which is a journal put out by the World Mizrahi, and it was collected, again, like many of the other essays, in the Sefer Kol Sofayach. He has two chapters there, about 15 pages or so, 10 pages or so, on the topic. He is the man on this topic. He has everything. This is the most significant source. A third source, which I forgot to mention, you'll forgive me, is Shlomo Shulman's brother-in-law, Rabbi Michael Talbis from New Jersey, who's a major Talmid Chacham in his own right. He put out a paper, not on all of Chumash, but on about two-thirds of Chumash Parshios in English, called The Practical Torah, I think it was called. And he deserves the credit, because it was from him that I had the inspiration. He discusses some of these topics in conjunction with Parshas Noach. I really, Chatasi, that I forgot to put his source on the sheet, but it's a very fine English book if you can get a hold of that as well. Very practical halachos, again, in the order of the parshios. So, the main person, as I say, the dominant person on this topic, the one who really moved everything, was Rav Gershuni. And he has the following answer. He suggests, again, a little bit that Shraga was getting to, but again, not by not mentioning the Sefer Mitzvot, that's not really relevant per se, but he suggests what we alluded to at the beginning of the shiur. And that is that it's possible that really what the Rambam is driving at is that the Rambam may hold that there is a mitzvah, that it's a good thing, he calls it a mitzvah kala, it's a mitzvah to learn Lashon HaKodesh. But he suggests that the Rambam does not believe that there's an independent per se or an inherent reason to know Hebrew. Why? So you can read, Ma'ariv. I mean, that's also a good thing if you can do it. But that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah of knowing Lashon HaKodesh is because without that, you can't learn Torah. Whether you want to call it a hechsher mitzvah, a name mitzvah, even a mitzvah, or for the Rambam, what you really have to say is that it's a mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah which is subsidiary of the larger primary mitzvah. The primary mitzvah is study and learn God's Torah. One of the things that we're obligated to do if we want to be able to study God's Torah is we need to know Lashon HaKodesh. Certainly, to be a scholar, you need to read things in the original. Lahabdil, right? You can't imagine Shakespeare in translation is not Shakespeare. It's a translation. So Lahabdil, the Torah in translation is not the Torah. You can get the ideas of it, but the Torah is Hebrew. Lashon HaKodesh. You can't understand things in the deepest way without knowing Hebrew. Lashon HaKodesh. And that, says Rav Gershuni, is the Rambam's fundamental opinion. And therefore, he says, that is why, fundamentally, the Rambam does not quote it as an independent mitzvah. He quotes it, he has it in mind, but he includes it in Talmud Torah. For this is the Rambam that was alluded to before. The Rambam, I don't have the source in front of you, but I mentioned it on the front page. The Rambam of Talmud Torah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Vav, tells us, he paraphrases the Sefer, but he totally leaves out Lashon HaKodesh. The Rambam says, when is it obligatory to teach your child Torah? Once they know how to talk, then you should teach them the famous Pasuk, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. And then, as they get a little bit more conversant, a few more pesukim, as they get older, each child according to their mental abilities. Basically, that's a rough translation of that Rambam in the beginning of the Talmud Torah. And some of the first few say, the Sifrei told us about Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Where does the Rambam know that there's pesukim? How do you know you build up? And what is, as we asked before, what happened to Lashon HaKodesh? That was in the original Medrash. It says Rav Gershuni, no, it's all the same. Each question answers itself. Because the Rambam holds that the whole goal isn't Hebrew per se. The goal is Torah. So the Rambam says, teach. So how do you, which Torah do you teach to them? Which was the point of the Hebrew? The Hebrew is the Torah. So you teach them a pasuk. Torah is Tzivlon Moshe. But since that's the goal, so when the kid gets a little better, that doesn't mean you go on to Hifil. Right? You go on to more psukim. The more psukim you can do. Again, ultimately, in order to be most conversant in the Torah, you need to know the Ivrit. But the focus is Ivrit 4, not Ivrit per se, Ivrit 4 Talmud Torah. And therefore, the Rambam quotes in the Talmud Torah, but even there, when he paraphrases the Medrash, doesn't focus on the Hebrew part, he focuses on the Torah part. Because that is the primary goal. So I mentioned, I thought I would tell you a story. So some of you know, I finished up high school at the Yeshiva Greater Washington in Silver Spring. In 12th grade, you didn't even have a Hebrew obligation. Because by 12th grade, of course, who cares? But when you're in 11th grade, they still pretended to care about Ivrit. But we were learning Maseches Kiddushin that year. And I still remember in the afternoon, the 11th grade Rebbe, well into the English part of the day, if you didn't want to take Hebrew, you could go to learn with Rabbi Cooper, the 11th grade Rebbe, Avnei Miluim. So, only recently I realized that the school was really onto something. Because the whole purpose of Ivrit was to be a Hefsher Mitzvah for the Torah. So, now we had Avnei Miluim. Again, you can imagine, the first goal is you never go to Ivrit. So you say you go to Rabbi Cooper, and then you cut that to go play basketball. But of course, you don't go to Ivrit. You sign up for Rabbi Cooper. And the Rambam and Rav Gershuni would tell you that's the right thing to do. Because the whole purpose of the Ivrit, which of course you know already because you're in 11th grade. So if you already know Ivrit, so then you go and you study Avni Malum in the Beis Medrash with Rabbi Cooper. I was reminded of this story this morning because it's tried to be Malam Tzchus on my alma mater. Anyway, and I assume that's not the only school. Let's fit into that category. Okay. Rishuni now adds, I alluded to a Yerushalmi. I have it on the first line here. It's a parallel to the Sifrei and the Tosefta. But this is an unbelievable proof, I think. Because the Yerushalmi, this is unbelievable. Listen to this. The Yerushalmi, also, it's the same story. When the child knows how to talk, teach them. But what does the Yerushalmi there say? Doesn't say teach them Lashon HaKodesh and Torah. He teaches them the Yerukot Lanu and teach them Lashon Torah. Yerushalmi, it's talking about obviously the same thing, it's talking about Hebrew, but the Yerushalmi refers to it as Lashon Torah. That's, I think, the only time ever it's referred to that as. Why would you refer to it as that? It's not the way we usually think of Hebrew, we call it Lashon Torah. So Gershuni says, because this is Hainu Haka, it's the same point. The significance in this context of the Lashon HaKodesh is that it's Lashon Torah. The whole purpose of learning it. Why, all of a sudden, We don't say when the kid knows how to talk, but sit this on the kid. We don't say make ruffles all of a sudden. We don't say that. Because it doesn't have any significance. Why all of a sudden are we worrying that they should know Lashon HaKodesh when they're, whatever it is, depending on the child, 1.5, 2, whatever it is? Because the focus is not Lashon HaKodesh per se. That wouldn't rise to the level, that should be the first thing you teach a child. Torah is the first thing you teach a child. But one of the ways, already from a young age, we're teaching our parents, and hopefully we continue in our schools though, one of the ways you teach Torah best is make sure they know Lashon HaKodesh. And that is highlighted, that goal, that telos, is guided by the fact that the Yerushalmi calls it Lashon Torah. And Rishuni, I think, very sharply connects that to his theory in the Rambam as well. Another proof that Rishuni quotes comes from the Shilas Yaivitz. The Shilas Yaivitz are the Tshuvos written by Rav Yaakov Emden. And there he's asked the following kasha. Are you allowed, again, people have all sorts of different habits. Somebody was very tempted to learn Hebrew grammar in the bathroom. It's an ancient minhag to read in the bathroom. I never was tempted to read a Hebrew grammar book. But somebody asked, Yaakov Emden, we know, is an interesting person. He lived in interesting times. So they asked Yaakov Emden, can you read Hebrew grammar in the bathroom? That's not Shaila. So he ends up saying no. But why not? Because he said, again, this is before, you know, Bialik. It was a Hebrew literature then. Now there's other ways to learn Hebrew. But he says, naturally, what's going to be your reference? You're going to read the Hebrew grammar book that tells you whatever the rule X or Y is. What's going to be your immediate reference? Right? Even if you're not a Balkari. Your reference is going to be Chumash. It's going to be Psukim. So Yaakov Emden says that so you're naturally going to be thinking of Psukim even though you don't have a Chumash in front of you. You have a Hebrew grammar book. But you're naturally going to be thinking of Psukim. That's not appropriate to do in the bathroom. Okay, that's the tshuva. So comes along Rav Gershuni. And he says, you see that Rav Yaakov Emden holds of the same yisod. Because if there was something inherently significant, a mitzvah of me'atzma of learning Hebrew, so then you wouldn't be able to read Hebrew in a bathroom. Because it's not appropriate to be doing a mitzvah like that in the bathroom. But that's not what Rav Yaakov Emden said. He said the reason you shouldn't read it is because you'll think of Torah. So you see that the whole focus is Torah. That's the problem. And in this case, you know, and now in theory, maybe someone could write a contemporary tshuva. So listen, we're living in a modern state of Israel. There's a million different things to read in the bathroom, which could be in Hebrew. You can learn Hebrew grammar without any reference to the Torah at all. Maybe now, Taka, if you're that bored, you know, that you could read that in the bathroom, because maybe in a Hanami, maybe you wouldn't think of Torah. But Yaakov Emden says, no, in his day and age, that's what you're going to think of, because what else do people know of the Hebrew? But that's a practical shaila, which is not our interest. Anyone for whom this is a burning question, you'll speak to me after the chair. But generally, more broadly and fundamentally, you see from this of Yaakov Emden that the whole focus, again, is not the Hebrew per se, but it is the focus that Hebrew helps us, Lashon HaKodesh helps us learn and master Torah on a greater level. Two more things. Number one is a very interesting machlokes, a discussion really, it comes from Magen Avram and the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. The Magen Avram, this is in Siman Nun and Aruch Chaim, this is in Berachos HaTorah, it's the context, tells us that if you do not understand what you're learning, you do not fulfill, there's no significance to learning Torah without understanding the words, right? We sometimes refer to that as davening up. The Gemara, so just reading the words and understanding it, you're not Yotze. That's what the Magen Avram says. So comes along the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, and I think it's Meduyuk in the Lashon of the Magen Avraham, I think he's right. Shulchan Aruch HaRav, original Lubavitcher Rebbe, and his Shulchan Aruch, and he says, that is only true about Torah Sheba'al Peh. You open up a Gemara, you don't know anything about it, and you read it, whether it's Hebrew, Aramaic, doesn't matter, primarily Aramaic, obviously. You read it, if you understand it, that's a call to mitzvah. If you don't understand it, that's meaningless. But Torah Shebechsav, you open up Parshas Noach, you don't know any Hebrew, you don't have an Arshma, you don't have a Matsuda, whatever it's called, the other English one I have now. You don't have any of those, and you don't understand Hebrew, and you just read Hebrew, says the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, that is a mitzvah of learning Torah. Reading the Bible, Torah Shebechsav, Tanakh, even if you don't understand it, is a mitzvah, even if you don't understand it, this is the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, and that's the Talmud Torah. So, comes along Rav Yitzchak Sarotskin in the Gemara Yitzchak, and he says, this is also part of the same story. Because the whole focus is on Torah Shebechsav. The language, as we quoted in the original Gemara, when it was Shalmi to pay Moshe, that the Torah was given in what language? It was the original. He had a friend who was in a college, and he was taking a Bible class with some professor, who happened to be an Apikoros, but he's supposed to be this world expert. And he came to him, he pointed out that he doesn't know Hebrew in the original. He's a brilliant, he knows all of the Bible in English. Maybe he knows it in Latin too, and in Greek. So he said to him, how could you, if you can't read it in the original, how could you possibly imagine yourself as a scholar? Okay, that was a parenthetical, gratuitous comment on my part. So, the point is that, of course, the Torah was originally given in Hebrew. So says Rav Sarotskin, since it's all a focus, it's all within the Talmud Torah, he's only asking questions. This little yingala, this 1.5-year-old child who now can speak, and the Torah says, the Medrash says, teach him a pasuk, Torah Kivlona Moshe. Does they understand the significance of that? Right, so everyone's thinking, well, my child did. Okay. My child did not. I don't think. Maybe she's smarter than I give credit for. Maybe she was smarter, who knows? But presumably not, says Rav Yitzchak Sarotskin. So what's the significance? This is the idea. The whole, as long as they know Hebrew, they can read Sukkim. And Sukkim in their original Hebrew form are already a mitzvah even at 1.5, let alone at 12 and 13. And again, the goal is to be when you're 30, not on the same Hebrew fluency level as you're 1.5. But even at 1.5, if you say Sukkim, that is a mitzvah, he says. And that's all part of this idea that the whole purpose of knowing the Hebrew, that you should be able to know the Sukkim. So now it's interesting. He says, he suggests, there's really two possibilities for this. It's interesting, I found one of our guests for Shabbos this week is Rav Reuven Unger from Yeshivat Shalavim, and he started about a year ago or so of sending out a weekly email shiur to alumni, in which he summarized for the email some shiur that one of the Rebbeim and Rosh Yeshiva gave in the yeshiva. And I remembered, and I found that a little while back, he quoted a shiur from the former Rosh Yeshiva of Avidan on this question, a short shiur on Lashon HaKodesh. And I saw that this is Rav Avidan, he really takes a strong position in something that Rav Sarotskin is not sure about. He said, or Sarotskin suggests, and I'll tell you the second possibility he suggests, why is it that there should be this magical idea, again I alluded to it before, but let's just to crystallize it, of Hebrew when it comes to Torah Shebechsav? written, right? The Bible, Chumash, why should Hebrew be so significant? That even if you don't understand it by just uttering the words, that's something that's significant. So the second possibility that he suggests is that even though you don't understand it, but you still fulfill a mitzvah because that is what Hashem gave Moshe. And there's something significant, profoundly so, linking up, even if you don't understand it. But that's not true about Torah Sheba'al Peh, obviously. Right? It wasn't written down. It wasn't meant to be written down. The other possibility, which he really suggests, Rav Avidan, I see this again, as this shir was written up on the email that I read, much more stronger. He says, no, not that. Fundamentally, he says, it's only bichsav, it's only called Torah Sheba Ksav. It's in the Mechetza, so to speak. It's only called Torah Sheba Ksav when it's in Hebrew. That is, if you take out the stone Chumash, or in this case the stone Tanakh, and you read all of Vayigash here in English, you understand the content of the Torah, but in the little score box, so to speak, that when you read that, that counts as learning Torah Sheba'al Peh. Translations of the Torah, by definition, because they're fine, but they're Torah Sheba'al Peh. Torah Shebichsav, definitionally, can only be one and only mean one thing. Greek is a whole separate shayla, but maybe Greek would be different, I don't know. But fundamentally, it's certainly not English and French and Latin or anything else. Hebrew is the definition, the defining characteristic, one of the defining characteristics of Torah. And therefore, it's not because Moshe gave it in that language, as opposed to in English. But English is still Torah. No, it's not Torah Shebasam. So again, this is almost an esoteric debate, but again, you see here again the significance of Hebrew as it relates to Torah Shebasam. I'm going to just briefly mention the last point, and then we'll close the shir for the night. This is also and comes from the Gur Yitzchak, or Yitzchak Sorotskin. He mentions that the Maharal, we have Rabbi Hartman, now I get the plug for our other guest for Shabbos, Rabbi Hartman is here. Rabbi Hartman is one of the world experts in Maharal. So in the Gevurah Hashem, in Perek Samuch Beis, he says the Maharal, that when we say a bracha every morning, Hashem Shabbos Zeranu, La'asok, the Divrei Torah, to involve ourselves in the words of Torah, why do we say the word La'asok? Because the Maharal says, against the Magen Avram, the Maharal says that La'asok means to be involved, open up a safer and read it. Even if you don't understand it, it's still a mitzvah. Number two, step two, Rabbeinu Yonah, Zir Rabbeinu Yonah, Tamid Rabbeinu Yonah, Masechet Brachos, and Daf Yud Aleph, also discusses the nusach. Why is it la'asok with divrei Torah? And Rabbeinu Yonah says that la'asok particularly refers to Torah Sheba'al Peh. So Sorotskin puts two together, and almost like a mad scientist, says, "Hey, what do you know?" If you assume that the Maharal held like Rabbeinu Yonah, it would come out that if you have Torah Sheba'al Peh, you daven up a Gemara, as we said, you don't understand the word, you're still Yotzei the Mitzvah. And then he wants to know, is that even true, depending on which side of the article do you open? The original or the translation? And he has a suffix about it. Again, for those who are interested, you can look in the sources I have you for research. He ends up backing out of it. But one thing significant that he does have at the end comes from a Mishnah Berurah, which I did not put on the sheet. Mishnah Berurah says, again, we know this in halacha, it's important for all of us to know, benching, davening, you can do that in any language. If you don't understand what it says in the Siddur, it's read the Shmoneh Esrei in English. It's much more meaningful. It's explicit in the Shulchan Aruch. But what it also says in the Shulchan Aruch is, if you don't understand the Hebrew, you're still Yotzei. It still counts as you said your Shmoneh Esrei. Okay, we're not talking about the first bracha for a moment. Or benching. The mitzvah davening. Let me just finish, okay? I'll talk to you afterwards, okay? I just want to wrap it up. So, benching, right? You thank God. But let's say you read an English bencher, but you're a Frenchman and you don't know English. This idea that you fulfill the mitzvah, you're not understanding it, so we hold that's only true in Hebrew. It's not true in any other language. You can bench in any other language, but then you have to know what you're saying. So why is that? So you take a look at that Mishnah Berurah. It's the last verse I have on the sheet here. It's in the Talmud Beis. Very interesting Mishnah Berurah. He says, because there's only, and this is what this will close, ending where we started, there's only one language in the world. That is Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh. Every other language is a translation, a perish of Hebrew. Okay? Thank you very much for coming. Mir Hashem, if we have a similar crowd, we'll have more sheets and more food.